Hello and welcome to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I am joined on this cold Monday in Toronto by producer and co-host Alex Wong. Alex, what's going on?
What's up, man? It's always nice to talk to you. You know it's Monday, Will, so you know what we're going to start with, right?
What's that?
I'm going to try to make small talk with you once again. That's our goal every Monday.
Is this an actual thing that we're doing?
Yeah, well, we're already off to a terrible start based on the energy from the both of us. So,
damn, how was your not good?
How was your weekend, Will?
I would love to say that it was great, but unfortunately, it has not been. Although I've only left my house in the last 6 days to literally only left once to get the booster. I think I got COVID along with the booster, so it was a 2-for-1 special. It's a very unfortunate place to get, you know, to contract it. But yeah, otherwise, I've just been chilling at home, you know, trying to fight this thing. But I'm feeling good today, so let's do the show, man.
No, I hope you are feeling better. Wow, what a terrible. Okay, I'm never doing small talk.
This is what happens when you make small talk Mondays, man.
It's, the first time I do small talk, you're like, I tested positive for COVID. But in all honesty, I hope you're feeling better. So the Raptors are feeling better. They have opened their They have opened. Watch the transitions today, man. They have opened the big blank era. This is what I'm calling the empty Scotiabank Arena. With two straight wins, they beat the Clippers on Friday against our close personal friend, Serge Ibaka. And yesterday, they won 120-105 against the New York Knicks. They are now 3-0 on the season against the Knicks. This is their second straight win. They're now 16-17 on the season. Once again, creeping towards that coveted 500 mark. 9-10 at home now, which is not bad considering I believe they started 2-8. At one point. So now the Raptors are ninth in the East, and we can get into a bit deeper into the standings and big picture later. But I thought we could start talking about this Raptors-Knicks game with who else? Fred VanVleet, who won the game in the third quarter, scoring 19 of his 35 points. Fred has been playing like an all-star, like Matt Devlin has been saying on the broadcast. Matt Devlin, by the way, shout out Elite Propaganda, just calling Fred VanVleet Freddy All-Star now. For no apparent reason, just
I was gonna say because
name now,
it doesn't even flow off the tongue. Like it's not like a wordplay. It's just Freddy All Star. Anyway, yeah, I guess we're rolling.
No, Matt is a super underrated propaganda guy because I know you noticed this too. Whenever guys shoot air balls on the Raptors and they land and the ball lands in the lap of like another Raptors player, he'll just yell "great pass," and he'll mean it too. So, shouts to Matt for always supporting the Raptors and supporting our show, honestly. But Will, what did you see from Fred yesterday?
A little bit of everything, honestly. I thought even beyond the fact that he had 35 points, I just thought all the little plays that he makes over the course of a game, you just can't take them for granted. Like he just makes so many smart passes, so many great defensive sequences from him. And look, last night, it wasn't like he had the greatest opposition going against him, right? Like, I mean, the opposing point guard was Miles McBride, whose name is apparently Deuce McBride, which is an actual great name. But like, come on, that's just not someone that's going to be consistently out there to stop Fred or match Fred. Then it's like Evan Fournier, who is pretty bad as a player just in general. So I'm not surprised that Fred went off against the Knicks, but at the same time, it's just sort of like the way he holds his whole team together. Whatever they need, he steps up and provides. And I think we all know that Fred is capable of catching fire like this. I think that, you know, in that third quarter when he had 19 points, he made 5 threes. And after the game, Fred was talking about, well, look, it's a lot easier to play, catch and shoot rather than trying to create, right? And he's like trying to attribute credit to his teammates for his just incredible scoring night where he had 35 points in 31 minutes of play, hitting 7 threes, 11 of 17 from the field. But when I was watching the game, I was pretty sure of this. And I went back after the game, after he said some of the comments about playing catch and shoot, I was like, did he have a lot of catch and shoot opportunities? No, in that third quarter, he hit 5 pull-up threes. So that's a lot of his own doing. I mean, maybe you would say, well, pretty good screen setting by guys like Ken Burch and whoever, but really it was just Fred getting his. And Yeah, I mean, if there were a time to start making an all-star push, I think Fred and Pascal both have timed their production beautifully, because both of them have, I mean, Fred's gone over 33 of the last four games. Pascal's flirting with triple doubles, and it just feels normal. Like, you know, right now they're in a really great groove right as the team gets healthy. A lot of guys getting out of COVID protocols. They had the full rotation available last night, and they looked great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things we kept comparing the last couple of weeks when the entire team was in health and safety protocols, we started comparing the same narrative as last year in Tampa, right? Like we talked about this a few times. They hit 500, COVID hit them, they lost 13 of 14, and that was essentially the season. I know it's still pretty early right now, and they're still trying to get back to 500, but the team is fully healthy, mostly, except for a few players that you always make fun of me of for not remembering. David Johnson, I believe, is still out, right? And
he is still out.
Who else? Isaac Bonga, I think, is out. So those are really the two guys that they're missing. So essentially, they have the full roster. And I do think there is optimism coming out of this weekend with the two wins, and especially, like you mentioned, how Fred and Pascal are playing, that the Raptors could go on a little bit of a run here. And one of the things that you mentioned in your 10 things, which I read all the time when you do write them, is that the Raptors' substandard record is the only thing keeping Fred from an all-star berth. Although without him, the Raptors genuinely might be in the lottery. I want to play a quick game with you. So the Raptors have played 33 games so far, right? 16 and 17. What do you think legitimately their record would be if Fred did not play in any games this season?
I mean, it's hard to sort of reevaluate this because maybe they try to make it work with Goran and he gives you, I don't know, 50% of what Fred gives you. And
that's,
you know,
generous, by the way.
Yeah. That's very generous. Let's be real. And let's say they probably construct the team differently. But honestly, let's just say, like, for some unfortunate reason, Fred just wasn't with the team for, you know, the season up till now. Like, maybe they will have 10 wins, maybe. But, like, if you just look at the guard play on the Raptors, right? Fred has been really good. Gary has been pretty good. Beyond that, the Raptors, aside from Fred and Gary, the Raptors might have the worst guard player in the NBA. Like, the guard play coming off the bench, whether that's Fee, whether that's Malachi, whether that's even Delano, who's had good stretches but has been inconsistent in that front. Goran's been MIA. Literally, he's in MIA.
Damn, that's a bar.
I know. I just came out of nowhere.
Damn.
You know, like, it's... they have the worst guard play in the NBA coming off the bench. That's why the bench has been so bad. So if you took Fred off this team, or if he hasn't been contributing the way he has, like, the Raptors really would be, you know, in contention to get another fourth overall pick. Like, honestly, like, it's that dire for them. Even though they have good forward play, even though, you know, you might argue over the long run, you can have some guys develop into the point guard position. You know, you would at least expect, if you gave them consistent minutes, that Malachi or Delano or even Scotty would sort of improve at that position. But I mean, Fred's been the Raptors' best player this season. If you look at the on-off metrics, you know, he's right up there. And, like, this is kind of a cherry-pick stat because two of these games the Raptors were without several other players as well. But the Raptors are 0-3 this season without Fred, so they're actually above 500 with Fred in the lineup this year. That's, you know, given the fact that the Raptors have been hovering below 500 for a large part of the season, that's not nothing.
Yeah, and I think the most remarkable thing about Fred is, like, you cannot talk about a single Raptors win this season without starting with Fred. Like, he has been instrumental in every single victory. By the way, my record, I would have the Raptors at 3-30 right now without Fred, okay? That's where I would have them at. But, you know, you mentioned his last four games, you know, yesterday, 35 points, 5 assists, 7 threes. The game before that, 31 points and 9 assists. Before that was 27 points, 12 assists. I mean, he has been playing as well as anybody in the league at his position, if you're just looking at that sample size. And I know we joked about Matt Devlin calling him Freddie All-Star, and there's obviously a huge push right now on social media by the fans, by the Raptors official account, And honestly, by Fred himself too, right? Like, he talked about it. He told you about it earlier this season that he does want to hit those goals in terms of being an all-star player, being an all-NBA player. And so I was looking at this. So just to refresh everyone's memory, so all-star starters are determined by a weighted vote of fans who make up 50% of the vote, media who make up 25%, and players make up the remaining 25%. So they pick the five starters in each conference. And then the seven bench players are selected through a vote by the coaches. And I was just going through, quickly gathering some names of guys that Fred might be competing with. So, I mean, some of these guys you might put at forward, but guys like Bradley Beal, Jaylen Brown, mm-hmm. James Harden, Trae Young, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, obviously, LaMelo Ball, Darius Garland, and then I have Fred in there. It's going to be tough for him to get in, I feel like.
It will be tough for him to get in, absolutely. Like, I think, and it's not like his numbers jump off the page specifically, but I think, you know, where he might get voted in more likely to me is by the coaches to the reserves who can appreciate the smaller things that Fred does, in addition to the fact that he's very impactful offensively. Of course, if you compare him to someone like LaMelo, for example, I mean, you know, LaMelo is a better passer, and definitely the Hornets are a better offense than what the Raptors are. But at the same time, like, when you compare what they do defensively, it's totally different. You know, when you compare how many minutes Fred has to play for the Raptors to succeed, like, I think these are things that the coaches will evaluate more than fans who, let's be real, I mean, if we're talking about who's a more popular player, LaMelo's one of the most popular players in the world, right? So, yeah, if Fred makes it, and I'll probably put it at 50-50, like, he'll probably make it as a reserve. I think the Raptors need to rattle off a few wins as well, get themselves over 500, get themselves to, like, you know, six in the standings, which they're only two games back of right now. It's totally doable, especially with a couple of home games coming up here. And then, yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is just the fact that he's even in this conversation with some of these players is really impressive to me, right? I think Bradley Beal's having a down year. I just watched him look really – he actually played a really good game on the weekend against Chicago, but shout out DeMar, second game in a row, hitting a game-winning three. I can't believe it. But, yeah, Bradley's not had that great of a season outside of, I guess, last night's game. You know, when you look at even James Harden, he kind of got off to a slow start. When you look at his numbers this season, he's only at 22.8 points, shooting 41% from the field, 36% from three. Yeah, the assists are really high, and, you know, that's something that he does – obviously really well, but he's also averaging five turnovers per game. Like, I wouldn't say it's been the best, even anywhere close to the best James Harden season. So, you know, that is something to consider. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, if Fred doesn't ultimately make it, I think that ultimately the impact that he makes on the team is up there with, you know, maybe not the very best players in the league, but in that B tier, he's there for me.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. And the one advantage he does have is this year, Kyrie Irving, well, unless he goes wild, he's supposed to be back on Wednesday, unless he's the greatest part-time player in NBA history, and Ben Simmons are both not going to be in consideration. It's interesting, too, you were talking about how just poor the guard play has been from the Raptors outside of Fred. And now that the Raptors have this full complement of players back, again, except for my guy, David Johnson.
Your guy.
Nick, yeah, that's my guy now. So he's my new Malcolm Miller.
Two David Johnson facts right now.
Anyways, we're trying to stick to topic here, please, Will. So
yeah, okay.
I think one of the things you did mention in your 10 things as well is, you know, people have been asking, how do you fix the bench? Because the bench has been terrible. Well, it turns out the magic fix is just have your starters back and for them to play really well. And yes, for at least three of them to play at an all-star level. Then when you bring in the bench guys who struggle, you're bringing them in when they're up 25 points and it really doesn't matter. But one of the things you did notice is that Nick just basically chose to go without a backup point guard yesterday, at least a traditional backup point guard. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think his reasoning for this is that he doesn't trust what Malachi or Delano is going to give them on a nightly basis. I mean, of course, he's never going to come out and say that outright. I don't think a coach really should, even though Nick has been willing to come out and say scathing things. I just don't think that he necessarily needs to here with these two young guys. But at the same time, like, Malachi and Delano both have had chances this year. You know, I think Delano's taking more of them, a lot more than Malachi has. But, like, realistically, these guys aren't players that you could trust to contribute for you every single game, game in and game out. So, you know, for Nick, he's thinking, well, look, he could start one of these guys and play them and whatever. And maybe I think honestly, Nalana might get more chances than what he got last night, which was essentially the only play when the game was decided. But he has Scotty Barnes as the sort of ultimate, like, you know what? Just go out there. You can bring the ball up. You can set up a play. You know, you can sort of fill in around the gaps. Like, he can play so many roles. He's so versatile. And then you have a guy like OG, who this season he's really improved his isolation moves, and he's really expanding that part of his game. And then you can really just cobble together a really solid defensive lineup. And I think for Nick, it's sort of like, look, ideally you want a lineup that's good offensively and defensively. He's just saying, look, the bench has been so bad offensively and defensively, I will just take only defense off the bench. And if you guys can run off some of those misses like the Raptors did last night against the Knicks, then I'll take it. But the most important thing is, at the start of the second quarter, which is usually a time where the Raptors start to lose momentum, because the starters usually play pretty well in the first quarter. The start of the second quarter is usually when the Raptors start to bleed some points. That and the start of the fourth quarter, that's usually when the bench plays the most. Last night, the Raptors started the second quarter beautifully. For 6 minutes, the Knicks only had one made free throw. That's it. One single point for 6 minutes. And the Raptors were able to open up that stretch. And I think for Nick, because of the way he started the game, which he had no traditional center in the starting five, that meant he had three centers coming off the bench. So, you know, I think you just have to play two centers at once. But I also think that that kind of works, because Chris has been fairly effective as a power forward defensively this season. Precious Achiuwa has been pretty solid defensively at center. And the two of them in the front court gave the Raptors a lot of length, a lot of shot blocking, a lot of rebounding as well. And, you know, the one thing they did really well was actually just get out on the break. And in fact, I was looking at the tape. Precious Achiuwa had three assists last night, all three to Chris Boucher, in sort of big-to-big kind of passing sequences in the paint, whether that was in transition, whether that was in semi-transition. They did a pretty good job of working with each other offensively as well. But most importantly, that lineup defensively, when you have Chris as a shot blocker at the four, Precious as a shot blocker at the five, you have OG, who's, I guess, the three. And then Scotty is the point guard at 6 foot, you know, 9, 6 foot 10, whatever Nick's been saying he's growing up till recently. And then Svi as the lone guy who's kind of like, okay, he's not, you know, the super rangy kind of guy, but even he's pretty big. He's 6'6 as well. So your smallest guy on the floor is 6'6. You have four guys on the floor who are like between 6'8 and 6'10. You know, they're just not going to score. I mean, part of that is, look, the Knicks just didn't have a lot of scores coming off the bench last night at all, considering how many guys were missing. But at the same time, I could see the strategy working against a lot of teams, at least on the defensive end. And if Nick can get solid defense out of his bench for like 4 or 5 minutes at a time before his starters start to really trickle back in, I think he'll gladly take it. And last night was a good positive step in that front.
Yeah, shout-outs to Scotty. You know, he didn't have a huge offensive game, but I thought it was interesting too that he started the game guarding the opposing team's center and obviously played point guard with the second unit as well. That's really the flexibility that I love about not just this roster, but Scotty in particular. And you know what? Shout out to Chris Boucher too. He's been playing better lately. Oh, and I know that when he's been struggling, we've given him a hard time. So, you know, being an equal opportunity show, not really. We got to give him a shout out too when he's playing well. You know, he had 12 points, two steals and two blocks for me in the 21 minutes. I think we heard Chris, I think this was a few weeks ago, talk about how he went back and watched tape of himself and just to remind himself the things that he needed to do on the court. Now, as great as Chris was putting up, yeah, as Chris, come on, man. Can we make it through one Chris segment without any slander? Please, this is my New Year's resolution. By the way, my other New Year's resolution is leaving the Svi 3-point count behind, because I'm no longer doing that. It's not going to happen. So hey, it's not happening, man. Trust me.
He didn't even take it last night. You're getting into that at this point.
Yeah. No comment. But I think the thing about Chris is he had these great scoring games last year that we all remember when he was in Tampa. But the reason why he got into an NBA rotation in the first place was with his hustle and with the hardworking plays. And I like that he's going back to that. And I think it really fits into what you're saying in terms of what Nick is asking for from the bench. He's not going to ask for everything, because there's not a lot of guys who can do everything. And I think if they just focus on the defensive end, I think that's great. But speaking of that, what's up with my boy Utah? Shoutouts to Tekashi. being the last guy coming off the bench yesterday. What's going on, man?
Speaking of Takeshi, by the way, I was watching the Knicks Nurse press conference, and he did ask about Yuta Watanabe, and he asked Nick about Yuta going 1-for-2 from the free throw line, and Nick kind of laughed and was like, look, if Yuta makes the next two free throws, he has 75%. But I just love the sky expectations.
Wow, Nick, hold on. Nick Nurse with the Will Lou math, because this is how you do math with me on the air.
Yeah, no, it's he was walking Takeshi through that one. I mean, but I really love Takeshi just calling in and asking, hey, what about Yuta missing one free throw in the second quarter, I think.
Listen, that's national news in Japan is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, damn, the expectations are pretty high right now. I mean, I think for him, like, he just hasn't played that great in the last three games here. He's missed a couple of shots. You know, I thought he was better last night, even though he didn't really impact the box score all that much. But I think, look, when the full complement of players are available, like, you're not going to have that many guys that are going to come into the game. So I think for me, the way for Yuta to get minutes is for him to outplay someone like Svi. Now, I would say he's been outplaying Svi anyway. But I think when you're looking at who Knicks, you know, bring off the bench right now, right? Is he better than Precious? I don't really think so. Is he better than Chris? Chris right now is playing great, by the way. The last 10 games for Chris Boucher, obviously this includes the Philly game where he went nuts, but last 10 games for Chris, he's averaging 14 points, shooting 53% from the field, averaging 8 rebounds as well, giving you a block on 25 minutes per game. Now, 7 of those were starts. We know Chris can be a productive with the starting group, but that's pretty good. That's almost close to what he did last season in terms of his averages with the 14 points and 8 rebounds, 53% shooting in these last 10 games. So Chris has really come around here. Ken Burge, we know, is a very solid player. He's going to play as well. So, you know, at best, I think Yuta can be like the ninth man in that group. And right now the ninth man is Svi. Nick also kind of explained that sort of Svi. He tried Svi and also tried Yuta a little bit interchangeably there in that spot. And I think that's where he needs to sort of take those minutes from Svi if he can do it. I think his defense is definitely better than Svi, but what they need from that position is just quality guard play. As I mentioned, the Raptors just had none of that coming off the bench this year on a consistent basis, and Yuta just got to come in and knock down more shots than a guy like Svi would. And right now, if you just had to say, like, you know, fate of the universe on the line, the Martians got the death beam pointing at Earth, you know, one shot, who do you want to take it? I mean, like, I probably would still take my chances more with Svi than Yuta, but I mean, either way, that's not looking good for Earth. So,
it's not looking good for Earth in general right now, but I'm not putting my fate of anything in Svi right now. You wild, man. By the way, it's wild that you use that fate of the universe, one shot on the line, and basically did three shows around that question while I was on staycation. Yeah, still tough, that. My respect level for you went up, you know, about tenfold after those 3 days. So I do think, yeah, you make good points about Utah. And I almost think, too, that because the starters are back and Nick can stagger some of those guys with the bench guys, that you don't necessarily need Utah's defensive presence as much, especially if he's not contributing, like you said, on the offensive end. I guess this just goes back to the same thing with Utah that we've been talking about since last year, is that he's got to contribute a little bit more offensively.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if he can just give you more scoring, he's going to give himself more time. Like, it's so weird to ask a player to take more shots. Most NBA players are almost too willing to take shots. And Yuta has increased his scoring. Like, he's gone from... I can't believe Yuta's averaging 7.6 points per game this year. That's actually kind of surprising. Did that not surprise you when you just heard this?
Yeah, I might need to fact check that, because we have established that he is good for 3-3 every game.
Yeah, no, he's at 7.6. So I'm running that up to 8. He's at 8-4 right now. It's not bad.
I love when we round up for certain players and round down for certain players.
Yeah,
there's no bias on this show. No, man. So far in 2022, this has been the most Chris Boucher friendly Raptors program. I might start calling him Chris Sixth Man of the Year, just like Matt Devlin's calling him Freddie All-Star. Let's start.
Yeah, we're gonna call him Chris Moneymaker, man. It's gonna get another big deal for agency.
What's wrong with you?
We're gonna take a break, I'm your host, Walu. You're listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And now a message from our presenting sponsor. Discover the best eats of your neighborhood on DoorDash without leaving your home. So many options to choose from, and ordering is easy. For a limited time, you can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code TheFan25. Fuel up for tip-off. Order today through the DoorDash app or DoorDash.com. DoorDash, delicious, delivered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I continue to be joined by our producer and co-host, Alex Wong. And we continue to be continuing this very positive episode on the Raptors after the heels of two straight wins at home with no fans in attendance, except for Masai Ujiri sitting by himself with, like, nobody within maybe 100 meters of him. Yeah, that's where we're at right now, so...
Yeah, this is why Masai's a legend, man. Those seats cost like $1,000 this year. Masai's like, I'm going to have the whole section to myself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, shouts to Masai. Speaking of which, before we get back to talking about yesterday's game, and I want to highlight Pascal Siakam's performance and a few other things, have a few news items I wanted to run by you, Will, and get your reaction on. So this is my React Pod. So you mentioned Masai. So there was a headline earlier today that I saw that certain BlackBerry phones will stop working this week. So the BlackBerry phones are starting to become outdated and retire, like the Walkman that I still use. My question for you is, should we put Masai's BlackBerry Bold 9900 in the Basketball Hall of Fame? Because he made a lot of iconic trades that led to the Raptors championship on that phone.
Absolutely. Just for the Andrea Bargnani trade alone. Because the fact that he got a first round pick from the Knicks for Andrea is pretty amazing. In addition to the fact that Andrea just inflicted so much pain on the Knicks franchise, I think they were really excited to get him. And then they realized very quickly why the Raptors got rid of him. But that is an all-time trade for me. Put Masai's BlackBerry Bold in the Basketball Hall of Fame. And I do wonder what Masai's using these days, because I doubt it's still BlackBerry, but who knows.
Yeah, there's been photo evidence that he switched off. You know, Masai is such a classy man. If I were him yesterday against the Knicks, I would have shown up wearing a New York Knicks Andrea Bargnani jersey.
Ooh,
I think that would have been a great troll. But Masai's not about that. It's not like he's ever said F Brooklyn before a playoff series. He always He always keeps it real classy. You mentioned that it has been a very positive show so far, so let's change that and mention our guy Goran Dragic, who was spotted working out at the Miami Heat practice facility recently and reportedly wants to return to the Miami Heat. And per Ira Winderman of the Sun Sentinel, he's one of the best Miami Heat beat writers. Goran was at Miami's Tuesday win over the Washington Wizards and obviously has been working out with them. Now, per the NBA rules, Goran cannot go back to the team that directly traded him this season. So the Raptors can't trade him back to the Heat. Now, there are ways I think they could maneuver around where Goran goes to another team in the interim and then lands in Miami. So there we go. Like you mentioned in the first segment, Goran has been MIA in MIA. How do you think this Goran Dragic saga eventually ends?
I honestly don't care. I don't care for this man. I don't want to reveal a specific conversation that was had in the offseason, but let's just say the Raptors don't really care for Goran. He was only in this deal to make the salaries work. They wanted Precious. They got Precious. We'll see how Precious goes. I care about how he develops and sort of ultimately what he becomes, but Kyle's a free agent. You make a sign and trade. You don't get a lot out of sign and trades. And Goran's deal was thrown in for salary filler, and that's it. I mean, what he wants to do with his time, that's up to him. To me, it sounds like he's down bad. Like, this team just picked up your option so that they could trade you, and then you're back with them. Look, if you want to go back to Miami, like, there will be a time for that, you know? In the meantime, the Raptors hopefully can make a trade happen here in the sense that, you know, there are deals that happen around the trade deadline, and just as he was used as sort of financial ballast to make the Lowry sign and trade work, it might, you know, factor in another trade around the trade deadline. But if it doesn't happen, I wouldn't be surprised if he's bought out. You know, give that roster spot up. The Raptors could probably sign someone else with that roster, you know, and Gron can get back to doing what he loves. He clearly just loves Miami. Yeah, good for him. I still remember the stories earlier this season where Kyle Lowry had to call Gron and be like, hey, can I have number 7? And Gron's like, yeah, of course. You know, like, I can't believe Goran Dragic was this much of a legend in Miami. So good for him, man. I mean, I do think the one thing is I would like one day for a player to love the Raptors this much to pull all these sort of strings to come back to the Toronto. Maybe Serge can be that guy. I don't know, because he definitely sounds like he wants to come back as well. But yeah, as for what happens with Goran, it doesn't matter. He's essentially not even part of the team anymore.
This would be like if Kawhi just suddenly showed up at the Raptors practice facility to work out back with his former team, which, you know, maybe we can make that happen as well. Who do you think has had a bigger impact on the Raptors this season? Follow-up question. Goran Dragic or Tremont Waters? Don't forget Tremont Waters had that behind-the-back dribble to avoid a turnover in the first quarter of their 45-point loss against the Cleveland Cavs. Can you name a Goran Dragic highlight that was as significant as that? Is all I'm asking.
Yeah, he did.
There we go. The answer is Tremont Waters. Games for the Raptors. Real Sports.
I don't remember a single Goran Dragic play.
Real Sports, give me the game-worn Tremont Waters from the Cavs game in exchange for a never-worn, still-with-tags Jalen Harris jersey, which I just can't seem to get rid of. Last news item for you, Will. I know you're a huge NFL fan. You're a well-rounded sports guy. So yesterday, Tampa Bay Bucks wide receiver Antonio Brown left the stadium in the middle of the game and basically just quit the team. Do you have a favorite quitting your job abruptly story from your maybe teenage high school years?
Do I have a favorite one? Not really, honestly. I've always been like a really hard worker. Not even like in the sense that I'm judging people who quit. Like, there's totally great reasons to quit. For me, I'm just like, it's hard for me to just kind of drop things. I would say like this past weekend, I was going to write 10 things on the Clippers game and then I wasn't feeling well and I didn't write 10 things. Kind of felt guilty about it. People were like, no 10 things today. Didn't really have the heart to tell them that, you know, I'm literally sick and down bad, but That's probably about it. I know, Alex, you definitely have a better story for this, so tell me. You're basically the Antonio Brown of I don't know enough about this guy to make that comparison. Never mind. I don't know about any sports except for the Raptors.
Man, I'm so tired of the comparisons I've gotten. I've gotten Taj Gibson. I think Assad called me Booby Gibson. I'm like every Gibson at this point. No, the only one I can actually remember was, you know, I worked a bunch of like retail jobs and then I worked at a few grocery stores. I believe it was Loblaws that I worked at in high school. I worked in the produce section and I was so bad. I think I was just let go after like 3 shifts. So I guess it wasn't me quitting, but I was abruptly let go. And I remember like they owed me a check for like, who knows how much that was for like 3 shifts. Like $200. No,
back in your day, that was like probably $10.05.
That's right. Man. Back in 1946, you know, we were making about $2.50 an hour. But I remember having to go back to the Loblaws basically every Friday asking me if they had my check. And I had to ask the boss who fired me every Friday. Like, this was just the most shameful thing to get the $200.
That's unbelievable, man.
And after 6 weeks, I finally got it. And I probably went to the casino and lost it in 3 minutes. So that is my story. Now, back to the Toronto Raptors, 120-105 win against the Knicks yesterday. We highlighted Fred in the first segment. I think we got to talk a little bit about Pascal, too, because he has been playing at an all-star level. Probably, I haven't seen Pascal play in this way maybe in forever when you take into his playmaking as well. What did you see from Pascal yesterday and honestly overall since he's come back?
I mean, I think he looks really comfortable in his groove. You know, it was actually interesting because he seemed like he was in a good mood at practice today. He talked about a couple of things. He said, quote, "I heard they're calling me Pascal Rodman out there," which I don't know who's been saying that, but we're just going to make that a thing. Just like, we got to slip that one to Matt Devlin so he could run with Fred Van All-Star and Pascal Rodman. But I mean, Pascal's grabbed 33 rebounds the last 2 games. He had 14 last night, including 5 offensive. He had 19 against the Clippers. He's been great, and I think that's a great sign of just how energetic he's been. His finishing around the basket has been a lot better. That's something that he was so good at in his most improved season. And then the 2 seasons afterwards, his sort of finishing kind of dipped off a little bit. Not that it was anything bad. It just wasn't like as efficient as it used to be, where it felt like when he first broke onto the scene, he would go over these post moves, put up these little hook shots at sort of really weird, you know, acute angles, but they would always fall in. He would have like just great touch on those. And it seems like he's getting back to that level. His separation in terms of getting the shot up over guys is a lot better. He's getting to his spots. He's getting fouled quite a bit as well. He's drawing double teams consistently. That's why his assists are jumping up. You know, I wrote, you know, in the in 10 things afterwards, like it's kind of wild that he's just playing a regular game for him and it's coming close to a triple-double most times. But, you know, the two-man game is there with Fred. It's always been there with Fred. But the way he's setting up other guys right now, he's playing great. His defense has come around since the start of the season as well. And of course, like there's always gonna be detractors for Pascal. They're probably like, oh, let's see this against like tougher teams, or like let's see this in the playoffs, or let's see this whatever, right? But right now, like I think he's beating the teams out in front of him. He's making it look really easy. And yeah, I mean, I think you can't forget the fact that he had offseason shoulder surgery. When he was coming back from that, you know, he just wasn't fully himself. But right now, he's close to himself, and I think his role looks really comfortable too. Like he's not really trying to like force anything specifically. Like I think he's really just like playing within the role and sort of like, you know, taking what the defense has to offer him. He's distributing well. He's rebounding well. He's defending well. He's scoring when he needs to. The jumper's there for him. Maybe the three is the one thing I'm like, okay, you know, I would like to see him get back to that level. But we all know that Pascal's success is not really predicated on how many catch and shoot threes he'll make, right? He's really going to make his money in the paint. And right now, his efficiency is really good. His playmaking is really good. I have very little complaints about what Pascal is doing. And, you know, my only hope is that he stays healthy and he continues to do this. Because, you know, when he's on like this, he's right up there with Fred in terms of the best player on the Raptors.
So Pascal practiced today, talked a little bit about his injury coming back from shoulder surgery. He says he's felt some tightness, but has been told that that's normal and expects it to loosen with time. And he said, quote, I'm feeling good. My body's feeling good. And I think I'm taking another step. And he also talked about how boxing out and rebounding has been a focus in film sessions with coaches recently. Listen, we know the rebounding numbers, the 25 points, 19 rebounds against the Clippers, 20 and 14 yesterday. But for me, it's the playmaking, right? He had 7 assists yesterday, 7 assists against the Clippers, 8 assists the game before against the Sixers. Mm-hmm. He's passing the Alex Eye test right now. You know, when I see him get double teamed, when I see the decision making on the offensive end, you know, I think a lot of times we talk about star players on offense, and that's the last part of the game of their whole package that they need to add, right? You know, aside from the individual scoring, the 3-point shot, is the playmaking that really sends you to another level, and you can run your offense through some of these players. And a lot of players sometimes don't get that last step. I think that's the most encouraging thing for me watching Pascal. And for me, honestly, you know, earlier I said like, oh, Chris got to just go back to focusing on the hustle plays and not worry about the scoring. I kind of apply that to Pascal too, obviously at a different level because he's contributing at an all-star level. But for me, it's like if Pascal just wants to go out here and fill up the stat sheet, I'm not too worried about the three-point shooting. I'm not even too worried about the scoring, because if he's having an impact on the game on both ends of the floor with the playmaking, with the defense and the rebounding, I actually don't know what more you can ask for.
Yeah, and again, the three-point shooting thing is like, it's a nice to have. I would say in certain scenarios, let's say in a playoff setting, I think teams will really sag off of guys like Scottie and Pascal, so then that's going to create some spacing issues. But ultimately, what you primarily want Pascal to do is affect the rim and then kick out to the shooters, because the guys that want shooting threes on this team ultimately are OG, Fred, and Gary. That's it, actually. those three guys. So you need somebody to impact the rim. Now, early in the season, it was largely Fred having to impact the rim because Pascal was out. OG was doing it, but not nearly as effectively as Pascal is capable of. Scottie can do it, but he's sort of inconsistent. Now that, you know, you have Pascal, who's primarily going to be able to get to the spots that he wants to, get downhill, get into the paint, he's very obviously going to command a double team down there. You know, that's when you can open up your offense, and that's where Gary Trent's got to be shot ready. That's where Fred's got to be shot ready, OG in the same way. And yeah, I think things are looking really good for Pascal. I mean, look, I think for him, like, you know, the expectations from the fans, whatever. I think people have seen enough of Pascal where they've sort of decided which side of the fence they're going to be on. But ultimately, players are, you know, even guys who are veterans are still a work in progress. And so for Pascal, I think he's keeping a light perspective. He's sort of being really mature about the whole thing. And right now, he's just playing freely. I thought the Sixers' performance was a great game for him in terms of, even though the Raptors lost, he kept the Raptors in that game along with Chris Boucher's hustle. But he really was able to create so much, even though Joel Embiid was waiting in the paint. And I thought that was a great sign of how much better Pascal is right now at getting to the basket as compared to sort of when he first came back from the shoulder surgery, or even at times last season when, let's be real, last season wasn't a very happy season for anybody. But probably Pascal was the guy that took the biggest hit out of everybody on the team. And, you know, I think he was probably looking for a fresh start. I think the Raptors probably looking for a fresh start. And right now he's looking as fresh as I've seen him.
Yeah, I think Pascal is a really good chance to kind of write a new narrative, especially based on everything that's happened the last couple of years. And I think the Raptors, now that they're healthy and fingers crossed they can stay that way, might be ready to write their own new narrative in January as well. So this week, they've got the San Antonio Spurs at home tomorrow, the most important game in recent Raptors history to get back to 500. And then, unfortunately, they go on the road at Milwaukee on Wednesday on the second half of a back-to-back. And then they're back home Friday against the Utah Jazz, one of the best teams in the league, and Sunday at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, not one of the best teams in the league. Wow, JV's going to come back to an empty crowd. So there's another empty Scotiabank Arena reunion. You know what? The schedule, you know, Milwaukee and Utah are obviously tough games. I don't know, man. I have until tomorrow, I guess. I might go wild and guarantee a 4-0 week for no reason.
You know what? Honestly, I expect the Raptors to, especially right now when they've got their guys healthy, they've got some momentum right here. They're playing a lot better of late. Especially when you throw out, like, especially that Cleveland game, which is going to, you know, just basically ruin their season sets all year, considering they lost by 45 with a starting five that was worse than the Raptors. Like,
cleaning the glass got to let us filter out that game when we look at.
No, Raptors, that's why Blake's going to be saying clean the glass every Tuesday, because, you know, that's the whole reason why cleaning glass exists, so that you can sort of filter these guys out. And yeah, like, I do expect the Raptors to take some of these games here. I mean, those are games that, you know, whether it's, you know, Milwaukee, Phoenix, or Utah, these teams are better than the Raptors. Don't get me wrong. But, like, I want to see the Raptors compete with these guys, and I want to see them take at least one of those wins. Because if you have your full guys available, you're at home, you're mostly rested, why not? Why shouldn't you take some of these games, right? So that, and then, yeah, take care of business. Keep taking care of business, whether that's the Spurs, whether that's the Pelicans coming in, like, you know, if you win the games you should and then go 500 against teams better than you, you're probably a pretty good team. And that's kind of where I want to see the Raptors end up, you know, around that sort of sixth spot right now. I'm looking at Philly, 19 and 16. Raptors are 16 and 17. When the Raptors played Philly, obviously they had some injuries and stuff like that, but I didn't feel like the Raptors were that much behind Philly. And that was a game where they didn't have Fred or OG. Or Scotty. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think looking at the standings in the East right now, I think it's pretty clear there's a top four, you know, however you want to sort it. Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Chicago, and Miami. And then when you get to the 5-6, Cleveland, who, you know, Ricky Rubio just suffered a season-ending injury, is at
fifth. It's all good, though. They got Rajon Rondo.
Oh, man. And then at six are the Philadelphia 76ers, like you mentioned. And then the 7-10 play-in spots right now are Charlotte, Washington, Boston, and Toronto, which, honestly, by all accounts, they all pretty much have the same record at the moment. They're all hovering either, you know, a game above 500 or one game below 500. So out of those six, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Washington, Boston, Toronto, and, you know, New York and Atlanta probably will get back into the race too at some point. It's going to be those eight teams fighting for two playoff proper spots, the 5 and 6, and four play-in spots, which, you know, I guess this is an obvious thing to say, but that's why I think January is so important for the Raptors to see if they can create some sort of separation or at least get over 500 where they can realistically look at the 5 or the 6 spot, which honestly, that is still open to them. And Fred was asked about the playoff race yesterday, and he said, quote, "For me personally, you're aiming for that top six. I think it's doable, but we're going to have to play good basketball for a long stretch of time." Listen, man, feeling pretty optimistic about the Raptors. You know, talk to me after Tuesday when they blow a 10-point lead against the Spurs. But I do feel like this, they've got a good opportunity here over the next couple weeks. And again, knock on wood, if they stay healthy, to finally just make some kind of push in the standings.
Yeah, and we need it. Let's be real, man. We need it, okay? Ontario's down bad.
Ontario's heading into another lockdown. So yeah. We need the Raptors to lock down a playoff proper spot. That's what we need, wow. Right?
We're really making lockdown puns, man. This is tough.
Yeah, my bad.
But seriously, though, I need the Raptors to do well here. I mean, look, I think they have the capability here to make a run. And when you consider the second half of the season, I'm still not sure what they're going to do with the rescheduled games. Raptors had three games pushed away. Like, and two of those against Chicago, by the way. And Chicago is the best
team. Just play those two on the same day somewhere, man. Play them at Pacific Mall. Who cares, man?
Play them at a doubleheader like baseball. Why can you play two baseball games in one day? This is what I never understand about baseball. Is it not tiring enough?
I mean, there's a designated hitter who just goes up to hit four times, and most of the fielders are just standing there. I love how I just disrespected the entire game of baseball. No, baseball is just more conducive to playing two games.
You have different starting pitchers, but you have different relievers. What other sport can you do? You can't play two soccer games in one day. You can't play two football games in one day.
You can't even play two football games in a week, man.
Exactly. But baseball's just it rained yesterday, so let's play two games today.
I need Matt Devlin on the broadcast to push for this Pacific Mall doubleheader, man. Let's just have two games, one in the parking lot and one inside. And we can have like a night market there, you know, with food and everything. Me and you can do the play by play. I'm finally gonna learn the players and tell you two David Johnson stories in the first quarter. So I think we should make this happen.
You know what? I'm gonna give you some homework, man. You gotta come back to me. I guess you're on the show.
You're giving me homework? Yo, I quit on air, man. This is my Antonio Brown moment. What's wrong with you, man?
I'm giving you homework. Tomorrow Tomorrow, you got to come back with two David Johnson stories, two unique David Johnson stories. We got to get
first
let
of
people
all,
know who the 47th pick was.
First of all, I'm going to need until Wednesday because you're assuming I'm even going to be on air tomorrow. So I think that was really brazen of you. Yeah, I'm going to be on for a little bit, but give me till Wednesday, man. I'm not fine, man. I can't believe I got David Johnson homework to do.
Yeah,
You know what? I'm gonna give you homework because I know you don't know anybody on the Raptors before the year 2001.
Yeah.
So
I'm 2003, I would say actually. So
I mentioned to you off air earlier this year about Hubert Davis because I told you he was like one of the early, you know, trade acquisitions by the Raptors, and you can't call our guy Paul Jones and ask him either. So I want you to come back on Wednesday. Let's make it Thursday. I'm giving both of us until Thursday when I think it'll just be me and you again on the show. So for Thursday, I'm going to have two David Johnson stories and I want you to have two Hubert Davis stories, okay?
All right. I will do that.
This is how we stay number one on the charts. Stay tuned for these David Johnson tales on Thursday. I'm gonna like find his high school coach or something.
No, pandemic content is tough. By the way, I searched up Hubert Davis, and I'm not even joking. The first picture that showed up, because you know on Google, like they'll show you little preview blurbs or whatever. This is Hubert Davis, American basketball coach. You know his Knicks stats, his Pistons stats, his Raptors stats. The first picture you see of Hubert Davis when you search it is in black and white, man.
No, come on, man. That should be my Wikipedia page.
This guy was drafted in 1992. I wasn't even born then.
You got to Photoshop a black and white photo of me during, like, Prohibition. I think that would be amazing. My God. Like, or Photoshop me on the poster of, like, the 1946 Huskies-Knicks game. Like, Photoshop me courtside with Keyshawn taking a photo of me.
Hey, by the way, this has nothing to do with the Raptors. Almost nothing to do with NBA basketball. But they're, you know, one of the first ever NBA basketball like games that was played, I think in the inaugural NBA season, there was like one like Japanese American guy who played for the Utah Jazz or something like that. I'm not sure if Utah even had a team at that point, but that's who I'm going to replace you with, man. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know. His name is slipping my mind right now. I'm going to get that. I've read about him a lot. I'm going to get that on Thursday as well.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm not surprised. I'm sure you probably wrote a profile on this guy at some point.
This is what happens. You profiled every Asian person ever. No, I grew up with him. This is what happens when we got 5 minutes to kill. He was your cousin. Appreciate you, Will. I'll talk to you tomorrow, man.
Yeah, that does it for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu. And you've been listening to The Raptor Show, powered by Door. Sports Then 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. And please rate and review our show. Thanks again to producer and co-host Alex Wong, to our board producer Andrew Holland, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
And now a message from our presenting sponsor. Discover the best eats of your neighborhood on DoorDash without leaving your home. So many options to choose from, and ordering is easy. For a limited time, you can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code TheFan25. Fuel up for tip-off. Order today through the DoorDash app or DoorDash.com. DoorDash, delicious, delivered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.